Well, good morning, everybody. This is Bob Elson. We're set again, as usual, for our Sunday morning show. And as you know, today is a very, very important football day. Two big playoff games today. They'll both be on television. And at 12 o'clock noon, the first game will pit Houston against Pittsburgh. And that should be some kind of a game. Man, that should be a rough game. And then the second game will be played out at Los Angeles. And that pits Dallas against the L.A. Rams. And if you're a football fan, those are really two marvelous games to see because all four of those teams are great teams. And I'm really anxious to see the Pittsburgh-Houston game. As you know, Houston has been hot. Pastorini has been really hot, completing all kinds of passes. And whether he can do it against Pittsburgh, that's the question. I personally don't think he can. I think Pittsburgh is too rough. They've got two of the greatest receivers in football, and they got a great quarterback in Bradshaw who's having his best year. So I look for Pittsburgh to win that game. Anyway, they'll both be on the tube, and it'll be an exciting afternoon of football. We're going to talk basketball today with an old friend of mine and one of the great coaches in the nation, Ray Meyer of DePaul. This man's whole life has been wrapped up in the game of basketball, and he certainly is one of the top coaching figures in the country. He's an old friend of mine. We're delighted to have him on the show, and he'll be with us in just about 1 minute. Well, we're very happy to have Ray Meyer as our guest today. When you talk about basketball, that's one of the names that immediately comes to mind. And he's done a marvelous job over the years at DePaul. I can remember last year in the playoffs, Ray, I was, man, was I pulling for you.
Well, Bob, we did very well until we got back at in Kansas, and we played Notre Dame, and the night before, big Dave Corzine dislocated his finger. But honestly, oh, I think we just ran out of gas. It was not the injury as much as we were tired. We didn't have the manpower, and Notre Dame just kept running fresh men in at us. And that last 5 minutes of the ball game, we just couldn't take it anymore. And that was it. No excuses. We got a chance to get even with them this year, and we play them in our gym, and we'll be ready.
Boy, that should be some game.
That's been sold out for 6 months, Bob. Oh, yes, they have one of the better teams in the nation, that big Notre Dame team and with Kelly Tripuka and that group, Branning. I just think they're a super ball club, but I'm leaning towards Michigan State. I think Michigan State has the number one team in the nation right at the present time.
Gee, that's interesting to hear you say that. Where does Duke figure?
Well, Duke would come in about third. I think Michigan State, and then I'd go with Notre Dame, and then with Duke and North Carolina in that, right in that order. I think that they're, as you know, Bob, when they limited the scholarships in basketball, they sort of leveled off all the competition. Prior to about 3 years ago, we used to have 26 scholarships for basketball. Now we have 15. Well, that's one of the reasons why DePaul is coming back and playing and winning more games, because right in our own area, if 11 scholarships have cut off every Big Ten school, and 11 from Notre Dame and Marquette and Loyola, Bradley, that gives us so many more opportunities to get talent. And as a result, we're getting a few good basketball players, and we're competing. And last year we picked up Mark Aguirre, the boy from Westinghouse, and he's a scoring machine. They're just doing well. He's the highest scoring freshman in the nation, and I still think he hasn't scratched the surface. He's so much better basketball player than he's doing today, and he's going to get better and better. Bob, you ought to be his agent when about 3 years from now.
Well, I hear he's great, and I'm really looking forward to seeing him. Ray, we all know that it's awfully, awfully hard to compete today at the level that you're on, and you've done remarkably well at keeping DePaul in the limelight. But what about these schools that have the wealthy alumni that are can out get out and hustle players? The NCAA just can't control that, can they?
It's very hard to control the alumni, Bob. I could for an example, you're an alumnus of DePaul, and we want a great basketball player. We say, it's illegal. We say, Bob, you go get the boy. How you get him, I don't want to know. But that's all illegal, and they're trying to put new rules and more stringent rules where no one, no alumnus, no friend of the university can go out and recruit a ball player. It must be a bona fide coach of the university. I think that may be a step in the right direction, but there's no way they're going to have an absolute control over it. And, of course, the schools with these big gymnasiums, they have to fill it. And the only way you fill it is to have winning teams. To get winning teams, you have to do a great job of recruiting, so it's a vicious circle. You must recruit. And that's the name of the game. I think you can't be a good coach today unless you have material. And it's funny, you become a great coach when you have great players.
Well, now, you had a job probably in getting this young star from Westinghouse.
Well, we practically lived with that boy for a whole year. We went to all his games. I'm doing the same thing with another boy. I watch him play twice a week or every night that I'm available, and I think that's the hardest job in coaching. Coaching is easy. I love to coach boys, to teach them to play, and that to me is a great thrill. But the recruiting is very, you know, it gets kind of distasteful. You go out and you have to meet the parents, the boy, the coach, and you're like a showcase. You're always telling the boy how good he is and how he'll fit into your program. And we're all selfish. The coaches are all selfish. All these boys are great basketball players, and if we get them in our program, they're going to enhance our program and make us better coaches. So we keep going out trying to get these ball players.
Ray Meyer, what can you offer a boy to come to DePaul?
Actually, we have offer the same as any other school. His board, room, tuition, books, all his fees. And that's the NCAA rule. And we can do anything that the NCAA allows. We have good dormitories now at DePaul, and they have the places to eat. They have the cafeteria there, and they would get the same as at DePaul as they'd get at any other institution.
Well, does the NCAA look sidewise at some of these, let's say, schools down south that seem to have these tremendous programs?
Well, Bob, I don't know if they look sideways or not, but I don't know how, the NCAA couldn't police all the universities, no matter how much they tried. I think the NCAA operates on the basis that somebody has to turn them in, and people are reluctant to turn another school in or another coach in, and consequently, many things go on that they don't know, but I don't think it's as prevalent today as 10 years ago. I think most coaches now feel that if somebody else is going to do something wrong, they're going to turn them in. And I think we ourselves must do more in the way of policing so that we can get NCAA action and start to get everybody on one plane where no one has an advantage. And I think we're getting to that slowly. There's always going to be abuses. It's like a thief out in the world. You can try to reform him, but he's always going to be a thief. He's going to steal whenever he gets the opportunity. And I suppose there are always going to be coaches that will be chiseling, and I don't know how you're going to stop it. I know I heard Abe Lemon say that one thing, probably the best way to stop all this illegal recruiting or anything, is give each coach $10,000 to recruit. And whatever he doesn't spend, he keeps. So they say they won't be throwing money around like that.
Well, now this young kid that you have from Westinghouse, who I wasn't sure you were going to get him, but you did, how far advanced was he when he came to you?
Bob, he was the best freshman basketball player ever to enter DePaul while I've been there. He does so many things. He's we call him an offensive machine. He shoots well from out on the floor. He's very good around the basket. He was lax on defense and rebounding, and he's picked that up in the last month. He's getting better and better. And I think that before he's through at DePaul, he'll appear on the cover of Sports Illustrated and Sport Magazine. And he also will probably be in first-class All-American selection. He'll break every scoring record ever set at DePaul University.
You've had some pretty good shooters there.
That's right. Corzine broke Mikan's record last year, and this man will break Corzine's record without even, well, maybe in 3 years what Corzine did in four.
Ray Meyer, basketball is a game where there seems to be a premium on the big man. Has it changed any in your coaching years?
Well, Bob, going over the years when we first started coaching, or I say 30 years ago, the big man, every rule we put in basketball was aimed at the big man. The center jump, we felt that he had an advantage, so we took out the center jump. Then we had couldn't hit the ball on its downward arc on defense because this big man had an advantage. They took that rule out. He couldn't hit it on its downward advantage on offense. Took that rule out. Then they put the 3 second lane in there, and then they widened the lane from 6 feet to 12 feet. Everything was aimed at the big man, and all they did was make the big man more valuable. He became more agile, and he did more things. There's always going to be a premium on the big man because basketball is a game of percentages, and the big man shoots, or he's hard to stop around the basket. He's getting the second shot because he rebounds, and he limits the opposition to one shot with his size. So there'll always be a premium on the big men. If you look in all the just for example, in colleges, the teams that win the titles, the NCAA, or the pro leagues, they all have a dominant big center, or they don't win. They control the boards.
Well, that's interesting. If you had your George Mikan back today, could he play under the new rules?
Bob, I think George Mikan could play under any rules. I think he'd make me a great coach. I'd love to have him back. With the team we have now, I think we'd be super with George Mikan. As old as he is, he just could stand out there and just get us the ball. We can run, but it's awfully hard to run without the ball. And we're finding that very difficult, and we're finding the difficulty in stopping big men. But in all fairness, the two boys we have alternating at center, they are getting better, and we are doing a better job of stopping some of the big men. And Mark is, just the other night, he got 14 rebounds. That's double what he was normally getting. And I think he's going to get better and better. And as he kind of starts rebounding, I'm going to look to be a better coach.
Our guest today, and we're delighted to have him, is one of the outstanding basketball coaches in America, Ray Meyer of DePaul. And we'll be back with our guest in just a moment. We're delighted to have Ray Meyer, an old friend and the outstanding coach at DePaul, as our guest today. You know, there have been a couple of sad stories in the last couple of weeks. The Woody Hayes story, that was really a sad incident. And I was sorry to see Madden quit at out on the West Coast with the Raiders. He was a great influence on football. Those kind of guys are hard to replace. Did you know Woody Hayes?
Well, I've met him, Bob. I didn't know him that well, but I feel that it's very unfortunate that Woody Hayes has done an awful lot for football and to be remembered as he goes out under this cloud where he struck the boy. There's no doubt in my mind that the university did the right thing. But I think some time ago he had a few incidents a couple of years ago. I think at that time the university should have reprimanded him and quieted him down. Woody, no doubt, was always a great football coach, and I just don't like to see him go out. He coached 28 years at Ohio State with a very respectable winning record, and now to go out as a clown or a bad actor, that's not the way I would like to remember Woody Hayes.
What was the problem with him? Unable to control his temper?
No question about it. I think winning, he became obsessed with the idea of winning. And that obsession just, that overruled his reason. He probably acted on impulse, and he didn't think. No thinking man would ever strike another player or one of his own players, no coach. They don't have the right to do it. These players are... they're human beings, and a coach in coaching should always respect their rights and try to treat them as he would like to be treated. You know, in coaching, over the years, you learn an awful lot. You can't yell and browbeat boys like you did 20 years ago. Now they're too intelligent, and you must reason with them. You talk to them, and you'll get more out of the boys by talking to them than you'll ever get by screaming at them. They don't react to that kind of emotion anymore. The boys are, they play on talent, not on emotion. Years ago, you always heard that story, win one for the Gipper. Now you probably, if the coach told them to win one for the Gipper, they'd say, who's the Gipper? That wouldn't bother them in the least. You just methodically tell them what they're supposed to do and how they're supposed to play. And if they don't do it, your only alternative is to substitute for them. There's no way you can make a scene in front of a crowd or even in the locker room in front of the other players. No boy likes to be downgraded in front of an audience.
Ray, in your own sport of basketball, there's some characters that go pretty wild on the sideline. Coaches I'm talking about.
Yes, they put in all those rules for keeping the coaches on the bench. I think they're, and I jump up and down. I'm one of them, too. I can't say that I sit there very calmly. I think they ought to have one of those seats that we have in the airplanes with the belts and fasten us in so we couldn't get up and down. I think, though, that they're beginning to calm down a little more, and I think the younger coaches are learning more about being a sophisticated coach, and they do a better job.
You know, Ray, the rules in basketball do something that you don't really have in any other sport to the same degree. The whistle slows down the speed, the continuity, and everything else. There are a lot of fans that feel there are just too many whistles in basketball.
Well, Bob, we counted them, you know. I think one referee blew his whistle about 22 times in a ball game. He's getting $150 in expenses. You know, he's getting a lot of money for every whistle he toots. And I think we ought to, I'd like to see less whistle blowing too. And, I think that we have too many fouls. And I'm guilty of that too with the four corner Ovechkins and holding the ball out, that leads to more fouls, more walks to the free throw line. And I really do think it detracts from the game. College ball, sooner or later, has got to come to the 24-second clock like the pros or the 30-second clock where they eliminate all the stalling. This way, the team that's behind trying to catch up is chasing the ball, and the other people are holding it, and they're fouling. And that's why there are a lot more whistles. You have to... The team that's behind in college ball has got a terrible job making it up because they let the air out of the ball and you chase them all night long. And the only way you get it back is to foul them. So you're going to the line. You got to foul. In other words, we call that fouling for profit. We look in the stats and we say, there's the poorest free thrower on the team. And when we get in trouble, if that man gets the ball, that's the man you foul. So we see it's percentage. So we're fouling for profit. And I think a clock would probably do away with some of that.
Ray, were you the coach that came up with the idea that there should be a larger count on a basket scored from farther out than in close?
No, I wasn't. I didn't come up with that. I would like. Well, that's awfully hard to put in the college rules. I saw that tried in the ABA, and there were a lot of people that liked it. I hadn't played a game with it, so I really wouldn't know. We have some kids that could shoot that three-point play this year. Maybe I'd like that. Yeah. Mark and Guire and Gary Garland would be super at that three-point play. But basketball, I don't like to see too many rule changes except to, as you say, eliminate some of the whistles. Maybe the clock would do that. And I'd like to eliminate a few of the jump balls. Because the Olympic rule where you take it out of bounds, you don't slow up the game. You just pick it up and you get it out of bounds and you run with the ball. And I think that the faster we play the game, I think the more entertaining it is.
Ray, I never could understand the pro rule where you get on the free throw line, you get three chances to make two. What's the sense of that?
I really don't like that rule because that's a real delay in the game. If he's a professional, he should be shooting at least 85% of his free throws. He shouldn't have to have three shots to make two. I guess that's what they call penalty. After a number of fouls, they want to make the penalty a little more severe so that they want to make sure that the man gets 2 points and rather the opportunity to just shoot two free throws. I don't like that rule at all because I don't even know how they figure the stats when they figure the percentage of free throws, whether they figure when he misses one out of the three, whether that's counted as a miss or if he makes the two or that. Yeah. I never bothered because that rule never interested me. I just don't like that rule.
I've often wondered, and you can tell us today, how close you came to joining forces with my good friend Arthur Wirtz, who I think is one of the real class guys in sports here in Chicago. And I know that you and he got together and talking about the job with the Bulls. How close did you get?
Bob, I was as close as I possibly could get without taking the job. I talked to Arthur Wirtz with Arthur Morris, our late friend, and at the time I was all set to take it. In fact, I had called school, and I was in the process of telling him that I was going to leave. But I admire Arthur Wirtz. I like him very much, well, because everything he told me came true. He told me just how it was going to be in the pro and how it was going to be at school. And I just admire him because he's a businessman, very honest with me, and I almost had the pen in my hand, to be honest with you, Bob. But
he's a super salesman. I'm surprised you didn't have the pen in your hand.
Well, I have a wife. We live alone, and the travel was the big thing, and that was a great deterrent because she would be home alone all the time.
You've had a chance to see Gilmore. He's a fantastic performer, isn't he, besides being a great person?
Oh, I'm talking to Arthur Gilmore the other night. I like him as a person, as an individual. He's a real man. As a player, he's a Super Bowl player. He does things so well, and without him, the Bulls would be just nobody. He has a brother, Bob, playing out at Bloom, Oren, who is even going to be as good, if not better. He's about 6'8" and a half now. He's an inch or two taller than Artis at the same time. He's playing on a team that runs, and he's a little more mobile than Artis. Artis is more power. This kid is more finesse, and he's a junior. Another year in high school, and he'll have every college coach in the country sitting at his doorstep.
Well, that's really something. I didn't realize he had a brother that was a player.
Well, he is a player. I went out to see him practice so early in October, and I was totally impressed with his mobility, and he's going to be a good one. And I told Artis the other night, I thought his brother is going to be a Super Bowl player, and the name of Gilmore will be in the Pro League for many years to come.
Well, let's hope he goes to DePaul.
Oh, I would like that too, Bob. That'll help my coaching.
Our guest today is Ray Meyer, one of the outstanding basketball coaches in the country. We're delighted to have him, and we'll be back in just about 1 minute. Before we leave today, I'd like to remind you that Ernie Banks, one of the all-time great Cubs, is going to be our guest next Saturday at our Elmhurst office. So those of you who live in Elmhurst, remember to bring your kids over there. You can get his autograph. Get his picture naturally on, autograph on the picture, and you'll meet one of the really great Cubs of all time. He's a tremendous individual. Ray, have you ever met Ernie Banks?
Very often, and like him very much. I think I had a story in one of the magazines here where I thought he was one of the sports celebrities of all time in the Chicago area, that he's done more for baseball in this town than any other individual, and he does a lot of charity work, Bob, and he's always smiling, and I just can't believe that he's got that nice, even temperament. You meet him once, and you meet him 10 years later, he'll know you, and he's always the same.
Yeah, he is really a super salesman, that guy.
Oh, I think he's a wonderful individual. I like to be in his company. I really enjoy him. The fact that He does so much for the youth. Anything for young people, he'll always lend a hand. And that is a great thing, because a man of his stature and his reputation to help the young is really something. And I think we should have there a lot more of the athletes who have attained stardom should look down at these youngsters and try to help them up the ladder and along the road of life.
Ray Meyer, what do you do with your boys on free throws? How much time do they spend practicing?
Well, Bob, we practice them. We split up the end of practice. We run them, and then we shoot about 25, and then we shoot this. We do various things and make them competitive. Some days we say you got to make 10 for 10 before you go in. Another day you got to make 44 out of 50. Then we'll line them up at the baseline, all the way across the line. And each boy walks up there, and they got to make 2 for 2. And if they don't make them, they run a line drill.
Do you prefer to have them shoot one-handed or two-handed?
We haven't had anybody shoot two-handed in a long, long time. Everybody shoots one-handed. Right now, of course, that is, there's less to go wrong with one hand than two hands.
Ray, thank you very, very much for being our guest today, and hope you have another great season at DePaul.
Bob, we hope so, too, and I'll be very happy, and it's awfully nice to be with you again.
Thank you again. Ray Meyer, one of the outstanding basketball coaches in the country. Remember, next Saturday, our guest will be Ernie Banks, and the following Saturday, our guest will be Roland Harper, the great fullback of the Chicago Bears. Have a happy day. Remember, a lot of exciting football on the tube today. And now this is Bob Elson saying goodbye until next Sunday at our usual time.